Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is May 1st, happy May, 2019. Today, and it's also Monday, Wednesday, thank you. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we are on page 23, the fourth paragraph that begins with "The tragic truth is." Today's readers are Athena B. for the 12 steps, Jennifer H. for the 12 traditions, Freya H., Anita L., Pia S., and our newcomer greeter for today will be Janice P.M., followed by announcements with Reggie O. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Tuesday, April 30th, is 12842. That's 12,842. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Wednesday, May 1st, is 12847. That's 12,847. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Athena B. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Athena B., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. These are the 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service. I pass.
Thank you, Athena B. And I'll now ask Jennifer H. to please read the 12 traditions.
This is Jennifer H., recovered compulsive overeater in North Alabama. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinions on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Jennifer H. For our meeting work, our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your share be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing on what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, please press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted using star 1. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 23, and there is a solution. We're reading and commenting on one paragraph only, paragraph 4, and I will now ask Freya H. to please read paragraph 4. Freya? I want to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we hear you great.
I'm
Thank
so
you.
Sorry. Okay.
No problem.
This is Freya H., a compulsive eater in Baldinic in Colorado. Page 23. The tragic truth is that if the man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. That's the end of the reading. And I think the part, I mean, to put this in context, the tragic truth, you know, that happy day that we're talking about is the day when, you know, when he rouses himself from his lethargy and asserts his power of will, which is using my self-will to, you know, to put down the food, to cure myself of this disease. And what this paragraph is telling me in a very, very clear way is that that's not going to happen. That I, you know, it says very clearly he has lost control. And this actually reminds me, in the next chapter, and more about alcoholism, it talks about, you know, young people who, that maybe they want to stop, or they, you know, that people who, it says on page 32, is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. And it also, you know, I like how it says in this book, there's so much humility that it's never said, you know, so many times they say we cannot solve the riddle for reasons yet obscure. It's basically saying we don't know why, and that's not what our focus is. Our focus is not on figuring out why. And so that leaves me kind of in freedom that I don't, you know, but that if I identify what's in here, then I can also pick up the solution that's offered. And my own experience is that I came into program very young. I had the, you know, the privilege of knowing, you know, knowing and learning at an early age that addiction is not something that you can stop on your own. And I knew there was something weird about my behavior with food. And it wasn't until I didn't, you know, it wasn't until there was part of me that knew I can't stop this food behavior. You know, I can try to control it, try to moderate it. I have some success, though I think I'm kind of beating the game. But when I got really sick and tired of playing that game, that's when I sought out this solution. That's when I didn't want to do it anymore. And I don't know what point it was where I, you know, lost the power of choice. I just know that by the time I was ready to admit defeat, that, you know, that I had crossed that line. And I just love how this book turns it around, because it says so many times in here that, you know, no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we use our experience to benefit others. And so this is not, you know, even though it is tragic, it's not a sentence, it's actually an opportunity. So I'm so grateful that I get to use my experience to transform into, you know, it's one of my greatest assets. That's how I can offer, to offer help to other people. And that's how I get to experience, you know, the true joy and connection that, you know, my higher power wanted me to experience. So with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Priya H. Who'd like to comment on this paragraph?
Pia S. in Florida.
Pia S.
Lisa B.
Roz G.
Kathleen O.
Selena in California.
Kathleen O. Selena.
Shawnee B.
Wendy M.
Shawnee B. Wendy M. I heard one more, and that could be a lot. Let's see. Selena M. Who came in there with Wendy B? Wendy M?
Susan
A. Okay. Let me see if I got this all right. Probably didn't, so you can correct me as we go. Pia S., Lisa B., Roz G., Kathleen O., Selena B., I believe, Shawnee B., maybe too many B's in there, Wendy M., and Susan H. That's what I think I got, and as I said, you can correct me as we go along here. Let's start out with Pia S., followed by Lisa B. Please go ahead, Pia. Pia? Star one to unmute.
I'm sorry. Do you hear me now?
Yes. Thanks.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks so much, Elaine. Thank you for your service. This is PS, recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And I'm just, you know, I'm piggybacking on the previous person here, because for me, the happy day when I was supposed to use my willpower to beat this disease, it never came. I don't have any control anymore. And I take one bite and then I say, like, no more. But then I feel the effect of the food. And then I think, okay, just one more. And then, okay, three more. And then just, okay, let's say half the box or the bag. And then, okay, I'll just leave a little. I don't want to finish the whole bag or box. But I'm thinking, like, oh, what the heck? I might as well finish it. Why leave the crumbs? So mixed in here is my desire to stop eating, you know, my huge desire to stop eating. And I have no idea, like, I don't know when I passed into this state, this condition that I can't control it. But I know that there is a way out now, and I don't have to live this way anymore. So when I follow the steps and use the instructions in the big book, I pick up the tools of the program. I, you know, as a result of that, I found my higher power. It's like my higher power was there all along, but now I acknowledge that presence, and I listen to the guidance that I get. I have a conscious relationship with God, and this is my protection. This is my protection against the food, against that first bite. And I turned 50 yesterday, and my life is so much better now than it has ever been. I feel younger than I was in my 20s, 30s, and 40s. I have a much more healthier outlook on life, and I'm in a healthy body. And I feel so blessed for this. And to me, this is just the beginning. You know, my life is, you know, I feel reborn after doing this program and after getting this connection with God. And I'm so grateful today. And yeah, thanks everyone for being there. I'll pass. Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you, Pia. Happy birthday. All right. We have Lisa B up next, followed by Roz G. Please go ahead, Lisa. I thought I heard a Lisa B in there. Was I wrong? Oh, my. Please forgive me. Let's go right for Roz G and then Kathleen O.
Is it my turn, Roz G's?
Yes, please go ahead, Roz. Thank you.
Good. Okay, thank you for your elegant service. Such a beautiful voice you have. Well, you know, when I think about things, it reminds me of Ruth's talk when she, you know, she's, you know, doing the, playing the role of the sponsor and the sponsee. And she talks to her sponsee and she says, okay, I want you to, you know, talk about, or I want you to think about every food that you try to control, that you say, you know, okay, I'm only going to have a little bit of this. And, you know, that's a convicting question. And it narrows the food down for me a lot. And I think about, you know, Girl Scout cookies, like one cookie, forget it. I need to have the whole pack, you know, the whole baggie or whatever, you know, they put them in lines. It's like a line of cocaine, line of Girl Scout cookies, one after the other. You know, they used to be really big boxes when I was younger and, you know, we'd go door to door and sell them. And now these little boxes, it's insulting. You know, my thoughts about that, how could that be so small? Or, you know, donut holes, give me a break. What's a freaking donut hole? You know, I got to have the whole thing. But that those thoughts are arrogant and out of control and sick and diseased. I need a strong degree of humility to recognize, to tell my secrets. I like salt. You know, salt is a big addiction for me. And salt makes me bloated. Thank God I'm abstinent today, but I think about eating a lot of salty crackers or, you know, whatever I can get with salt. And then I look at my stomach and it's all bloated and I think, well, why? Well, it was because I ate too much crackers or salt or whatever. And I cannot stop without the help. Without no human aid's going to stop me. I need my higher power. And I just want to share, and I'll wrap this up by saying, I have a new higher power for a while. Mine never stay the same, and it's a blanket. It's a soft, caring, warm, and loving blanket. And, yeah, I just need that for now because I discovered some new character defects that I need God to wrap me around, and not the food, but a nice blanket. So, no, I can't control it. I need God, period. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. Kathleen O., you are up next, followed by Selena B.
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning, everyone. It's Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. And I had to ask, you know, is this me? And big yes. Big exclamation mark. You know, I tried willpower for years, and I thought willpower was what I needed until I found this big book. My family, my friends, it's like, you know, how come she can't stop doing this? And, you know, even when I did stop, my mind was obsessed, and I actually felt worse when I stopped because the mental obsession. And, you know, this is talking about the real compulsive overeater. And I didn't know, because I had this from I can remember as a very small child having this problem. And I didn't know I was a real compulsive overeater, but I did know I had a real problem. I mean, growing up, I knew I had a real problem. I would assert this willpower and be determined, and I'd actually lose weight. And the whole time I was doing it, though, I was pretty miserable, and my mind was obsessed. And so to come in here and realize that the problem is we have an obsession of the mind, and we needed something, you know, I came in here and found out I needed something bigger than myself. I was never, ever going to be able to do this on my own. It just wasn't going to happen. And it was easy for me to accept that because I proved over and over that I couldn't do it on my own. And, you know, what is that great obsession that someday, somehow, we're going to be able to control our food? Well, you know, it's not going to happen. So the mental obsession of today, you know, I used to think, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to eat the food, but I'll get it back tomorrow. I'll be better tomorrow. But the best place is to know that I can't stop no matter what I know or no matter what I do. And I needed a power greater than myself. And I needed all the answers are in this book. There is a solution, and it's amazing, and it works. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathleen O. Selena B., you're up next, followed by Shawnee. Hi, by Shawnee B. Please go ahead, Selena.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes.
Thank you so much for your service. This is Felina D in Palm Springs, California. This is my first time sharing on this meeting, so thank you for picking me. I feel like romper room. I finally got picked, which is really sweet. So I really appreciated that passage and the reminder that I don't have choice. I don't have the power to do this thing. And I was at a face-to-face meeting yesterday, and my former sponsor was there, and she talked about how she weighs herself on the first of the month. And I thought, maybe I should go ahead and just weigh myself tomorrow. And I did, and I was up 4 pounds. And the miracle of that was that I, you know, I'd prayed before, I prayed after, and what I can see very clearly is how much my self-will has been up. I celebrated 10 years of abstinence in March from my bottom line of recreational sugar, but that doesn't mean I'm completely surrendered around the food. I haven't been grocery shopping. I haven't been shopping vegetables. I haven't been cooking because, you know, thanks to this program and my recovery and other programs, your life is getting big and life is getting full. And you know, making outreach calls is boring because nobody ever calls me back and my head can spin. And so I really, I did some writing this morning and I thought, you know, what am I willing to do? What has worked for me in the past? And that is being rigorously honest about the truth. It is working from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is getting on as many meetings as I can and taking the actions because God can only do for me what he can do through me. And for me, what that means is I have to pray for the willingness to take the actions of going grocery shopping today, of doing the cooking, of putting the stuff in the Tupperware. That's how I demonstrate whether I'm willing or not. Because I can sit in a meeting and I can write and I can do all kinds of stuff. But when it comes to taking that action, I need to be rigorously honest. I've had incredible opportunities over the past couple of months. And like I said, my life is getting fuller and richer, and because I qualify for multiple programs, you know, it is the whack-a-mole situation sometimes of, you know, what do I need to tend to? And so I'm so grateful that you're all on this call today and you're all committed to studying the big book of AA and the steps therein because that's where the solution is for me. I know that. I know I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind, and part of my obsession of the mind is I can get away with this. And I've been getting away with a lot. I've had a lot of travel and have made some decisions to take my will back, and I need to really look at that honestly. So this has been a really wonderful opportunity to turn some stuff over, and I want to pass and thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you, Selena D. Good to have you share today. Shawnee B., you're up next, followed by Wendy M. Please go ahead, Shawnee.
Hi, this is Shawnee B. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was unmuted. Shawnee B., compulsive overeater. So I haven't been on a meeting, and actually I haven't shared on a meeting in a little while. And I just wanted to share to, you know, if anyone out there feels the same way that I kind of feel. I've been kind of feel like I just finished my first trimester, and my disease has really just been, it's almost like getting pregnant has taken me to a new level of, like, I'm powerless just because I have no idea in my head what's right, what's wrong, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. It just feels so incredibly powerless. And I've been dealing with a lot of, well, you're not really an addict because of this, and you're not really an addict because of that, and you're not really an addict because of this. And it's been very terrifying for me. And I have just been so blessed to be able to just, you know, it's like, I don't even know what to tell my sponsors, but I'm like, I just need to get on the phone, and we just need to be reading and doing and getting on meetings. And I feel very blessed to every morning just say to my higher power, your will, not mine. Like, please guide my next thought, my next action, because it's crazy. Like, it's insane because on one hand, I'm like, I'm such an addict. I don't know what my next thought should be. On the other hand, I'm like, I'm not really an addict because I'm not really as crazy as everyone else. In my first trimester, I did lose a lot of weight. And so that kind of really brought me back in the disease, because I was like, oh, maybe I don't need this because I've lost so much weight. So there's been a lot of confusion. And funny, because I'm like, I'm recovered, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm so confused. So how could I be recovered if I'm confused? And I'm just going through a hard time. And yeah, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much for your honest. Oh, I'm sorry. Are you done?
No, I was done. I was just telling you I was done. Thank you.
Shani, thank you for your honesty. And you just keep showing up. You're in the right place. There is a solution.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Wendy M., you're up next, and after Wendy will be Suzanne H.
Yes,
please go ahead, Wendy.
Yeah, Wendy M. in Boulder, Colorado, and thanks for the opportunity to share. So what I don't want to do is share, which is why I'm sharing, and I want to say that I really relate to this passage with regard to my food, but also currently and this is what I don't want to talk about, which is I absolutely am out of control in a relationship that I'm in. And I share this because it does affect my food, because we talk about the buildup of everyday emotions. And I might be weighing and measuring my food, which I am, and preparing my food every day and bringing it with me everywhere and all of that good stuff. But there can be other areas of my life where I am unwilling to put it down, whatever it is. And currently it's a relationship. And it's absolutely not working. My life is absolutely unmanageable. And my thought is, I can do better next time. You know, I can just understand my obsession better, and therefore I can manage it. I can play God. You know, and I wrote to God this morning and said, I want peace. And God said, you know, then you're going to have to follow my will. You're going to have to just surrender everything. And I said, well, I still want the relationship, right? I still want the food. I still want the relationship, and I want peace. How can we do that? You know, God, can you give me what I want? Because I'm terrified to let go, of control, which is what they're talking about here. You know, we've lost all control. I absolutely feel that way. I'm triggered constantly in this relationship. And I go back with the hope that because it's a Wednesday night, it will work out, or because I've meditated long enough, or because I've had enough therapy today that I'll be okay. I mean, it's unbelievable how much I am running the show, how I am trying to control outcomes. And it's the same with the food. You know, I can have this food and be at peace, you know. And God's like, you have to surrender the outcome of everything. You have to let go of the obsession. You have to let go. You've got to admit you've got a problem. You have to admit that just like the food, you're seeking ease and comfort from this person. and therefore you have to control situations so that you get that ease and comfort. And God says, you must trust me radically. You must surrender absolutely. But it's got to get bad enough. It's like the food. It's got to get bad enough. Is it bad enough? You know, well, you know, there's that still in my mind, that lurking notion that it's Wednesday night, it'll be okay tonight. I'll do better. I'll behave better. I'll be better, you know. Are you willing to put it down? How desperate are you? How much is it not working? How much do you want peace? Peace in the sense of trusting God's will completely, you know.
Gentle reminder.
Thank you, you know. And God's like, I have a better plan for you, but you must put it down, put the food down, put the person down, put the behavior down. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy M. So after we hear from Suzanne H., we're going to open up the line for some more sharing. And we're commenting on one paragraph at the bottom of page 23, the fourth paragraph that begins with, the tragic truth is. So after Suzanne H. will be your opportunity to share if you'd like to. But first, we'll hear from Suzanne. Please go ahead.
Susan H., compulsive overeater in Denver. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. My phone was acting up. I really love this paragraph because it talks about, to me, the idea of denial. And just the words that it uses things like the tragic truth. So the truth meaning what's really there that we don't want to admit. He has lost control. And lost my note here, of absolutely no avail. This is the part. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. So what this is, what is it that's already arrived in my life that I just haven't come to understand, what was just shared? What is already a truth in my life? He uses that word truth, be it tragic or non-tragic. What's tragic is when we don't realize our truth, because then we're not living in his will, we're living in ours. And I think this just reminds us that sometimes we think we hit bottom. You know, when I hear so many stories on the line, but in reality, there was times when we already hit bottom, but it just took us years or days or weeks or months or whatever our story is to actually come to understand that. So with that, I just kind of reflect on my own life of what is already is that, not that, how do I put this, what is already is in my life and already exists, and that me realizing it doesn't change it, but it already was long before I ever realized it. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Susan H. Okay, we have time for some more shares. Who'd like to comment on that fourth paragraph on page 23?
Mo H.
Mo
Blair
H. Blair
E.
Blair E.
G.
Sharon
W. Allie A.
Beatrice O.
I heard Beatrice O. We don't have time for everybody, and I missed a couple of names. Let me tell you who I got. I have Mo H, Blair E, Sharon W, and Beatrice O. With time for one more, I think.
Paula D.
Paula D. Okay, great. Thank you, and I'm so sorry if I missed your name. Mo H, you're up next, followed by Blair E.
Thank you very much for your service, Elaine, and all those giving service on this line. So I'm going to focus in on the last sentence. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected and long before the food goes into my mouth. Something is going on. And I have proved this over and over and over again with many flips and relapses that the food is the last thing to go in. I start getting weak in my program. I stop going to meetings. I stop making phone calls. I stop my reading and writing. I stop working in the big book. I stop doing my steps. I stop doing 10 steps. And You know, maybe it's months, maybe it's years. And for me, the last time, as it said on the bottom of page 22, you know, once he may be abstinent or sober for months or years. I had 5 years. And then that tragic day came and I put the bite in my mouth, the sugary food. And I was off and running for 2 months and I could not stop. I could not stop. But I had not been working my program for those 5 years as diligently as I am today. I work my program every day from the minute I wake up in the morning to the moment I go to bed. And I enjoy working my program, which is a dream, which is a gift. I never thought that in retirement, and I'm retired, that this would be my job description. But I enjoy it. I love it. I love outreach calls. I love helping people with 10 steps. And I work my 10 steps. So I'm just going to stop there, so I'll give other people time to share. Thank you for letting me share, and have a great day.
Thank you, Moich. That's generous of you. Blair E., you're up next, followed by, it may have been Karen W., Sharon or Karen W. Okay, Blair E., please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Hi, Blair E., recovering anorexic bulimic compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Really grateful for this meeting and really grateful for this paragraph. It's so important for me to be reminded of the tragic truth that I can't control anything in regards to my body, my food, or my exercise. I'm coming off of like 6.5 months of not being able to exercise really at all because of a compulsive exercise-induced injury. But looking back at these packs, 6.5 months, I can see how much I was unwilling to be honest. I, you know, my PT would be like, okay, you can walk. And so I would compulsively walk as much as I possibly could. And, you know, even within the first 2 or 3 months of the injury, I really refused to get any sort of outside help with the pain because I was like, I can handle this. I can figure it out. I don't want to be told what to do, as well as like the self-pity of like, well, I did this to myself, so I have like this cross to bear. And so it's just amazing how as time goes on, it unfortunately takes a, like hitting a bottom that I hit in my abstinence to really show me the other places that my disease shows up. And it's crazy the way that the whack-a-mole works, even within my own disease, if it's not, you know, restriction that I'm obsessed with how I look. And I've been really grateful, like the restriction has been lifted so much in the past 6 weeks, and it feels like my food is huge. And thank God I'm working with a sponsor who sees my food every single night, because I can tell her, look how like I'm eating so much. She's like, you're literally eating the same that you've been eating for the past 3 months, maybe you're having like an extra fruit. And so I just have to remember, I'm dysmorphic with my food. I'm dysmorphic with how I look, and I'm dysmorphic with my exercise. I think that if I'm not powerlifting all week long, that I'm not moving and I'm not exercising, and that's not true. So I'm facing the truth that, that I'm really dysmorphic with everything in my life that pertains to this disease. And I'm so grateful there's a solution. I'm so grateful for sponsees. I'm so grateful that I have a sponsor, because I can't do it alone, because without this, I'm in excruciating level 8 out of 10 pain, thinking like this doesn't count as exercise while I'm having like sciatica shooting through my body. So I'm really grateful. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Blair E. I believe it's Karen W. that's up next.
It is.
Followed by Beatrice O. Thank you, Karen. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Karen W., compulsive overeater in Austin, Texas. And grateful to be on the meeting this morning. And this this description of the desire to stop eating is of no avail, and this tragic situation has already arrived. It just sounds so it is hopeless. And I look at it like spinning my wheels or chasing the wind. And it's, you know, it's almost habitual, you know, and what I find is that emotional cravings come on, And I can tell because I immediately start thinking about, it's a trigger response to food. And I can put food in front of my higher power God. And I can do this over and over and over. And when I spoke with someone a few weeks back, you know, it's like doing the hard part over and over and over again. And so for me right now, I am going through some changes, and my whole life is 180 degrees different because I just retired not that long ago. So I have all this time on my hands, and I'm just trying to, I don't know, I'm like experiencing myself on a different level, you know, because I was in such of the work grind, and, you know, the focus was, you know, get the food, get to work, get the clothes, you know, just that kind of robotic existence that I was living. So now all that's come to a halt, and I've incorporated some really good things in my life, like exercising every day, meeting friends at the Y, things like that. But, and the food is going good. But I just, like yesterday, I just noticed I had this emotional craving and I wanted to eat extra food. And it was like, what? Okay, something's going on. Well, I'm slipping in my 10 steps. I'm slipping in my 11th step. I'm slipping in my reading, in the program. And so I'm headed for a binge, you know. And so really this is a tell on myself conversation I'm having with y'all. And I'm telling on myself. And so I can move forward now and do what I have to do before I pick up the food. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Karen W. Beatrice O, you're up next, and then Paula D.
Good morning. This is Beatrice O from Los Gatos, California. And I also weighed myself this morning, and I haven't released any weight. And part of the reason is I haven't been weighing all my food, and I've been on vacation, and I have a lot of excuses. But like the paragraph says, the tragic truth is that if a man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may never arrive. I am a food addict, and Mo said, I have to work my program, and I have to weigh and measure my food. That's the reality for me. The next thing I think I want to talk about is this food addiction is like being in bondage. It's like I'm a slave, and I have a chokehold on my neck, and only God can give me relief and put the addiction aside. And I heard at a meeting one time, it says the longest distance between your mind, your head, and your head and your heart is the longest distance that you'll ever take. And a couple paragraphs before it says, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. And I believe that if I don't surrender everything, my life, my children, my relationships, because God just doesn't want a piece of me. He wants all of me. And every surrender that I have done where I didn't completely surrender everything I have and everything that I am to God, the answer was always relapse. And being enslaved to food is kind of like, that's my higher power. That's my dependency. And I need to have God in my life. And spiritual, you know, I'm not going to get spiritual every day. I have to renew it every day. So I'm grateful. And I have
a reminder.
Okay, so thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Beatrice. Paula D., you're up next. Please go ahead.
And thank you. Thank you for your service today. This is Paula D., currently in Florida, recovering by and with the grace of God. And, you know, I'm just going to circle this here. He passes into a state. Now, when I drive back and forth, which I currently do from Florida to New Hampshire, Mass., you always see that sign, welcome to Georgia, welcome to North Carolina. Doesn't much matter if you wanted to go there. That's the state you're in. Something happens where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. Because it's not about the drinking, it's the thinking that starts the whole process. And as always, the heart beats, hopefully, the lungs breathe, and that mind's always thinking. But look at what it says here. There is a solution. But before we come to a solution, we have to come to the place where we know. Long before it is suspected, maybe in an inkling, maybe ever thought now and then, once you come to that place, something opens up. But if you don't come to that place, what's going to open up? You know, I just had a stent put in, and I hope you can understand, it was 100% blockage. Nothing was going through. Nothing. So they put a stent in. Why did they put a stent in? To open a way. This is what it does. Opens a way so the flow can begin and we continue on here. Every case long before is suspected. But I love this because whether it is or not, something is transpiring. The more I look at this, the more I know where I am today. Where I was, is it important? Well, yes, it is. But it says here on 83, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Even here, but you have to know it. How can you live something you don't know? Once you come to that place, not understand it, by the way, I haven't understood how come my brother's eyes are brown and mine's are blue. I don't understand that. Well, why would I even get into that detail? Oh, that's that mind of thinking again. But I want to say, somehow, even though this looks like a terrible place to be, tis not. At a certain point, if this is the point you have to be at, to finally get a stent put in and finally get that flow going. And the repercussions of that were not from today, 10 years ago. They were from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Do you know what? Somehow, I don't have to go back 20 or 30 years ago. Today, a way was made for me, and I am very grateful. And as I listen to this, I know, and I want to just end with these steps. You live them. You live them. You love them. You know them. They become part of who you are.
That's a reminder.
Well, thank you very much, and with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Paula D. We do have time for about a one-minute share if anybody has a burning desire.
Clara G.?
Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Clara G. I just wanted to say that for me, I have been a food addict all my life, but what confused me, what made me believe that I had control were all those great diet pills, speed, then bulimia. Bulimia made me believe that I had control on my weight gain. And then at the end, I did a bypass surgery. And that was like, for me, I felt that it was like the great solution, a solution that I have dreamed since I was little. And I could not eat sugar with that. After they did that for me, because it made me feel like I was passing out and other ugly stuff, other symptoms. But it was so ugly that I felt like I was dying. So that fear of feeling that way prevented me from eating sugar. And so I had like three years in heaven after the surgery. I lost all my weight. I didn't have problems with eating until I could start eating sugar again. Then the symptom, that daunting syndrome, was no more. And so I started eating sugar and all
gentle
my
reminder.
Food. What's that?
Gentle reminder.
Oh, okay. And so all my food problem came back. And the thing is, though, that I have been a food addict all my life. The only thing that confused me in accepting that was those artificial things to control it. But without those things, I have never, ever been able to control food on my own. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kara D., and everybody who shared today. Really appreciate it. We're going to transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Anita L. please read a vision for you?
Good morning, everybody. This is Anita L. from outside of Philadelphia. Thank you for a beautiful meeting today. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.